Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's
green. Hey everybody, that was the Divine Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, which won a Grammy. Except for the word Solartopia, I wrote that. This is Harvey Slogo Wasserman back for another Green Power and Wellness show. We are devoting these times, these time slots, to our 1 hour, actually it's a 90-minute Zoom call that happens Monday nights at 5 o'clock Eastern time. If you want to join us, email me at solartopia@gmail.com on these Zooms. We have about 80, 90 people discussing the devastating details of how this election is being, frankly, stolen. We look at the voter rolls. We look at the vote by mail, early voting, and the vote count in nitty gritty, granular detail. And it goes on. But this is how the election is going to be turned. And if you don't mind, I think it's important enough to put this in our slot, our Green Power and Wellness slot at PRN. So thank you, PRN, for running this. And please take a listen. It's deep, it's devastating, and it's absolutely essential. So we are now going to go to the podcast, to the Zoom call and the recording of our session. Again, if you want to join us, email me at solartopia@gmail.com. But listen in closely, please, because this will tell you what's really going on in this election and how the Trump people are trying to steal it. We do not get through this unless we counteract these details at the local level. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week on the Green Power and Wellness Show once you've listened to this.
Let me go through the agenda real quick. We're going to talk about intimidation of Virginia. Jan Bandor should be with us. We're going to talk about the situation in Detroit and voting in Michigan. We want to talk about what's happening in Florida based on a stolen election in Florida. We want to talk about Ohio. Bob Fitrakis is with us to update on swing state Ohio. We have Steve Rosenfeld to talk about a major piece he just put out and the reality that young people and black people are more likely to have their votes thrown out through absentee balloting. Jennifer Cohn should be, yes, she's with us, and she will be showing us a postcard and a short video. We're gonna talk about scanners and the digital scanning machines, which are gonna be counting all the ballots and which will be, or most of the ballots, and which will be presenting us with the first early results, which is going to be absolutely critical. There have been another number of very interesting court rulings on incoming ballots, both of them benign, actually, but we want to understand that. So it's wonderful to see everybody. We do, of course, want to commemorate the great Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Was a force of nature, and I want to point out that we're in the middle of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and it is a, shall we say, a prophecy or a halacha or whatever, that people who pass at the New Year, at the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah and the Yom Kippur, are very, very special, very spiritual people. I'm sure the spirit of Ruth Ginsburg will be back with us very soon, if not already. We already miss her, and of course a giant battle is not just looming, it's already in progress over how to handle her seat. Annabelle Park has emailed me that she's put the link in the chat, that tomorrow she and I and some other folks will be doing a training, what amounts to a training video for people who are going to go in and deal with election protection on the precinct level. And I will be joining her and with hopefully some other folks at the grassroots to talk about that. And we will produce a video out of that. So thank you, Annabelle. Much appreciated. Rest in power. Very good, Mike, for Ruth Ginsburg. And in her spirit, let's proceed. I want to start first because it could become relevant on a national scale. I read disturbing news today that the Postal Service, literally thousands of postal workers are coming down with the virus. And the question will rise, this is a nonpartisan call, but the question will rise whether the negligence of the president on the Trump, on the virus, and the choice not to inform the public is in fact an impeachable offense. And I just want to raise that issue. It certainly will come up in the Congress, given the nature of the battle over that Supreme Court seat. So it's something to put in there, and it, hopefully at the end of the conversation on the details of the election system, we can perhaps have a discussion on whether the official response to COVID is impeachable. Since we are focused on the machine and the machinery of voting and the realities of voting, we have already had a significant incident at an early voting station in Virginia, where apparently there is actual blockage of by people of access to the polls. Stephen Spitz, you're in Virginia, and you're familiar with what's going on in Fairfax County. Can you tell us what you know about what happened on Monday or on the early voting? I do want to mention, I guess I can mention it right now very briefly. Stephen Colbert has done an astonishing thing, and everybody should go to his website or whatever. I don't have a link, but he has actually done 50 separate little video spiels on voting. and he's actually taken the care to not just sit back and do one and say, hey, I'm Stephen Colbert, here's one thing on voting. He's actually gone state by state for all 50 states and presented some of the realities of voting in those states. So I think we owe Stephen Colbert a great thank you, aside from all the other stuff he's been doing, and that he's taking very seriously this issue, and just Google him and see what he's done. It's really instructive and very, very useful. We have not heard yet from Michael Moore. We have approached him to do at least a PSA on this. We haven't heard back from him. I'll mention here up front also, there's a lot of polling going on about this election, and it all seems to indicate that Biden is ahead, except for one. And then one of the most disturbing, well, we're nonpartisan, the most, shall we say, interesting poll was cited by the New York Times. And the New York Times did a very large piece, very easy to Google it, on the polling for the election. And it was 99% showing that Biden was winning, including in the swing states. But in one little corner, it said, here is the polling if it is as inaccurate as they were in 2016. And those polls showed Trump winning. So if you want a dose of reality, Google the New York Times and its most recent major is a big article on polling, and then look in this obscure little corner where showing that Trump wins if the polls are as exactly as inaccurate as they were in 2016. So take a look at that. We then want to finish up. Also, I want to up front, this is a brief one, the Zuckerberg grants. A couple of weeks ago, it was mentioned on this call that Mark Zuckerberg has given $300 million to two foundations, $250 million to one and $50 to another, for local election boards to apply for money to do their election. Now, at some point, I believe we posted the links to the two foundations that got the money. I have since lost track of those links. If anybody knows which foundations they are that got the money from Zuckerberg, the everybody should be getting their local precinct to apply for this money. It's absolutely essential. $250 million in one foundation and $50 million in another. So if anybody has the links to those two foundations, that would be great. Okay, that's an overview. Let's start. I don't know how many of you saw the link, but there was a group of Trump supporters showed up at the early voting precinct in Virginia, in Fairfax County, a heavily Democratic precinct. There looked to be about 30 or 40 of them. None of them were wearing masks. And they did physically block access to the polling station. So, Joel Siegel, you have a law degree. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah. If you break the law, then you either have to pay a fine or go to jail. I think what we have to do is meet with our board of elections, meet with our mayors, our city councils, and there's going to have to be security on site. There's plenty of money for it. I think also the governor, especially Democratic governors, could promulgate a rule that says, here's the law in our state. And I don't know if you have to stay 100 feet away. Depends on, it's not unconstitutional to, and Mike is a lawyer as well, it's not unconstitutional to tell people that there's a limitation on your freedom of assembly. I don't remember in law school or when I worked in law firms, anything that said that you could block the entrance for people voting. I think they need to be arrested and put in jail.
Hi, I'm a lawyer. I work in Fairfax County. I'm the co-chair of the Fairfax County Democratic Committee's Election Law and Voter Protection. I am Stephen Spitz's co-chair. I've been waiting here to talk.
Hey, good. You're on.
Shall I?
Please.
Or is it just dudes talking?
No. It feels like a
guy fest, you know?
Excuse me, Kristen. I'm going to make it very clear to everybody. This is a beloved community. We're going to speak with each other with respect at all times. And the reason why is if we don't do that, that's how movements get destroyed. So I would ask you, Kristen, and everybody on this call, to keep it positive. There's a thing called technology where people can't see. This is not a guy fest. I have a mother who loves me. Now, with all that,
all right, let's do it. Kristen.
Let's keep it positive. Trump is making us negative enough. Let's keep it positive. Thank you.
Go for it, Kristen.
Okay, so early voting in Virginia started on Friday. And in particular, Fairfax County, which is Virginia's largest jurisdiction, where pretty much one in every 6 or 7 voters in Virginia lives, we had very long lines. Some people had to wait 3 to 4 hours on Friday to vote. The second day of early voting was this past Saturday. And again, some people had to wait a long time, 2, 3, pushing onto 4 hours. But what happened was at a neighboring jurisdiction called Prince William County, the head of the state Republican Party had a pro-Trump rally. And after that rally, they all decided to drive up into our Fairfax County to our main government center, which is where the only early voting location is at the moment until we open up 14 satellite locations on October 14th. And what happened was they just came in with revving trucks and cars around the parking lot. Down through the center of basically 2 wings of a parking lot is where this mile line long was that you've been seeing on the national news outside the Fairfax County Government Center. And then they got out of their cars with all sorts of banners on sticks and the like, not wearing face masks. And they gathered there on the center plaza, which is basically where the front entrance is, the front doors, and where the line comes out of, because the line also snakes throughout the inside of the building. They were creating such a ruckus and such, to the point of voter interference and election interference as well, that They were reported to the election officials. The election officials came out, cleared it out. But no, this is the start of election interference, voter intimidation that we can expect throughout early voting and on election day itself. The one thing that I was almost surprised, given here in the open carry state of Virginia, that is also the headquarters of the NRA, that more folks were not had their weaponry on them, which we've seen many a times in all sorts of right-wing rallies. But there is a couple things in the Virginia Election Code. One, you are allowed to electioneer beyond 40 feet of the entrance of a polling place. But you are not allowed to do voter intimidation, election interference. It's actually a felony in Virginia to do so in our election code. And our local prosecutor is looking into just that.
Very good. So it's 40.
Yeah. Can you hear me, Harvey? Can you hear me now?
Steve, yes. Go ahead. Steve, you're also in Virginia. Kristen, is there more? Or can we
no, Stephen. I throw it to Stephen now. That's great. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay. So I want to recount to everybody that yesterday morning, I received a call from a friend who just happens to be the chief deputy prosecutor for Fairfax County, Virginia. And when he called, I said, so are you going to prosecute these people? You know, before he opened his mouth. And we had a discussion about that. And he says that they are trying to decide exactly what to do, when, that they would probably file something maybe today, but sometime soon, because what was going on there clearly violates the Virginia Election Code, which says if two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, intimidate, prevent, or hinder any citizen of this Commonwealth in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the provisions of this title, or because of his having so exercised such right, they should be guilty of a Class 5 felony. Eyewitnesses there describe that these people, these Trump supporters, were shouting in close proximity to voters waiting in line to vote. That clearly, that they were blocking the path to go into the building to vote. They were, I think, clearly violating this provision. So stay tuned to see whether or not there's any prosecutions. But I am not surprised, and I think Kristen is not surprised. I have been saying for months that it is likely that Trump supporters are going to show up without wearing masks, and that's another important thing in the middle of a pandemic. These people don't wear masks. They shout at people in close proximity trying to vote. People are legitimately afraid, of course, of catching COVID. And so I think, you know, this has happened already. I sent an email of the latest statement to Mike and Joel and Harvey of the statement of the chair of the Fairfax County Democratic Committee, of which Kristen and I are co-chairs of the Election Law and Voter Protection Committee. And you might want to circulate that, where Brian Graham is his name, and Brian was an eyewitness. He went in with the county executive when they finally realized the literal danger these people were in and ushered them inside the building. What they were doing, and I had talked to the secretary of the electoral board, what they were doing is they have some sort of procedure where they only allow a certain number of people inside, but they really needed to get these people inside, even though there were more people inside, because they could protect them inside. They couldn't protect them from these maskless Trump supporters shouting at them outside. So they hurried them inside for that reason. I would fully expect this to happen throughout the country. And I think that's something that everybody needs to look out for and have observers have cameras on this. Fortunately, there are videos of this that have been widely circulated to actually make sure you record it, make sure you talk to your local prosecutors about it and send them the video because that's the only recourse that they, you know, prosecute these people. But they will not stop doing this because they're being encouraged, of course, by the current occupant of the White House.
Right. And
so that's basically.
As Kristen pointed out, it's a miracle they weren't carrying guns, and we can certainly expect them to come with guns. Whenever you get a video, and this is one of the reasons we need poll monitors, everybody should be videoing this. Please send us the video. We'll post it at grassrootsep.org and at freepress.org so that the video is out for everybody. Kristen, did you want to add anything to that? And now you're muted again. It's okay. And then Jan Bandor. Go ahead, Kristen.
Okay, I guess I'm now unmuted. I got muted again. All right, so Stephen's advice, I guess, in some ways is dependent upon how good your local prosecutor is. Ours is an elected Democrat. I would think that if you're in places in America where you have a draconian Republican endorsed or outright elected Republican prosecutor, you may not be able to go to them. If anything, perhaps you should be going to the voter protection team of the Biden campaign and the DNC or your state Democratic Party that is part of that network. Stephen and I work in close concert with our Democratic Party of Virginia, and they are hooked into the Biden campaign and DNC voter protection. So I would gather that if you weren't as lucky as we are in Fairfax County, where all these officials are pretty much all Democrat, including the prosecutor, that you may want to take it to the campaign lawyers who would then find a way to approach these prosecutors. And if they're just like, talk to the hand, we don't care, you know, they could find a way to sue in court. Take it to federal court or okay. State court.
Yeah, that's actually another resource that I would encourage people to use. A place that I used to work at for a long time, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law Election Protection, 1-866 our vote. The Lawyers Committee is going to have people in all sorts of places to do that. And, 1-866 our vote is a good phone number to get people to call nationally if there's any problems like this or anything else at the polls.
Yeah, and then also in open carry states, the big gun nut states, do expect people to carry their AR-15s strapped, you know, off their shoulders and hanging at their hips. We see that all the time until recently when we flipped our state house. These gun nuts come with these big guns in Richmond, and it's really scary stuff. They're very threatening, and that's very intimidating.
One recent development that we should know, and that is that Fairfax County Board of Supervisors just voted last week to ban guns at every polling location. Before that vote, and they voted after the state legislature authorized to take such a vote, there were guns permitted in the Fairfax County Government Center and in all other government centers and community centers, not schools, but now they can't bring guns in any polling location.
Yeah, and that law was passed in a special assembly of our now fully Democratic, or at least Democratic majority General Assembly down there in the Richmond State House in light of the massacre at the Municipal Center, the main government building in Virginia Beach in a couple of years ago. So, elections matter, and we want no more massacres like Virginia Beach and Virginia Tech in Virginia.
Okay, so Jan Bandor, do you have similar thing? And then we'll get to Ruth Strauss. And there are things being posted in the chat about this. Ruth Strauss says that the ACLU has had a hotline. I'll ask her about that in a minute, but Jan Bandor, do you want to relate the situation in Michigan? I mean, this is the core issue here. You know, the United States has a long history of violence at the polls and people showing up with guns to kill black people, which has happened, certainly throughout the last couple of centuries. Jan, what's happening in Michigan with this?
What we're doing is something that we've tried before with a lot of success, is we're asking to meet with local police where there have been problems. And we have some lawyers helping us with a handout which lists the laws that pertain to elections in our state, because police are the first to tell you they don't know anything about election law. They're totally unprepared. Even the state police, who are the most often called because the locals don't want to get involved. After all, it's political. Yes, elections are political. And so if they have information, they're much less likely to be useless. And it usually boils down to disturbing the peace, intimidating voters, which is against the law, and violating the 100-foot electioneering limit. So if they know the 15 misdemeanors and felonies that we want them to be looking at and that we want them to handle strictly, they're a lot more likely to be cooperative when they're called by election protection advocates. And I can tell you that in regard to the comment that was made about the Democratic Party being unprepared, I called Erica Perisman, who heads the Michigan Democratic Party program where they're recruiting and training people to be on site as election protection challengers. Unfortunately, they're all attorneys. That doesn't mean they know anything about elections. And I offered to work with her because our group is preparing people to do a very different program where we're looking for violations of election procedures and integrity. And I said, why don't we coordinate so there's one of your people protecting voters and one of our people protecting the election working together? And she completely blew me off. I have her email where, well, we've been doing the same thing for 20 years and you should know that, and you know, that's it. They just don't care. I'm part of a coalition of groups that are particularly focused on African-American communities that are vulnerable to these GOP thugs. And we've been trying to get the attention of Mark Elias because they keep doing the same thing over and over again. Isn't that the definition of insanity? So I know that you wanted me to talk about something different, Harvey, and that is
Detroit. We'll come back to you.
Okay.
About Michigan.
Sure.
But you say the law in Michigan is 100 feet. In North Carolina, it's 40.
Yep, 100 feet.
In Virginia, it's 40. So we need to know. I'm going to have to write about this. Send us everything. Send all your videos to me and to grassrootsep.org. We need to build a file on this. We need to know the law. We need to have people at the polls taking videos. This is completely predictable. We knew it was going to happen. It's happened before. And we've got to deal with it. Ruth Strauss, you had a hand up. Ruth, if you can unmute yourself or get unmuted.
Yeah, actually, you already announced it, that I think, and it's great about the Lawyers Committee on Civil Rights, because they have always been, you know, ultra progressive. So they're great. But also, I think the ACLU should be enlisted if anybody has any contact with them. They've done this before. And, you know, there needs to be a well-publicized hotline where people can call in. And I do remember that during one of the Obama elections, they actually had an 800 number where you could call in at the time that the incident was happening. So I think they would certainly be willing to do that, and we ought to reach out to them to do it.
Right. Okay, very good. Somebody mentioned carrying pepper spray. I can't comment on that one way or the other, but it was a comment in there. Does anyone else have anything to say?
Not a good idea.
No.
When there's not a good idea when there are guns around. Sorry.
Okay. It was just on the table there. Does anyone else have anything to say about physical intimidation at the polls now? Put up a hand. Okay, then, you know, this is a serious question. We knew it was going to happen, and just, it did not take long.
Harvey.
Yeah.
Yeah, just briefly, we should be asking the Board of Elections. We're doing this in Ohio. What is their safety plan? I think Jan's absolutely correct. I mean, we need to be meeting with the prosecutors and the local police. Because if they've got no plan, usually in the past, they've arrested us as election observers, not the people who are doing the harassment.
Right. All right. Well, Bob, you and I, we should conspire and put something in writing about this. As we say, we all expected it, and it certainly didn't take long with the beginning of early voting to see the intimidation forces out there already. And it's you know, terrifying. Let's just be glad that we have early voting and we have 5-6 weeks to deal with this. If it was all happening on November 3rd, you know, the election would be as good as over. So let's deal with this as we speak. Okay, Jim Van Dore, I wanted to come back to you. Andy Sachs, you're on there. Andy is my old buddy from the University of Michigan Daily. Jim Van Dore, you're also near Ann Arbor. We had a discussion, somewhat terrifying actually, about the power of a specific clerk in Detroit. And this is instructive of the power that one official embedded in bureaucracy can have. So can you talk to us about the situation in Detroit? Oh, you're muted again. You spoke before, we could hear you before.
Harvey, who are you calling on?
Jan Van Dore.
Yeah, Jan, you can unmute yourself. You're a co-host. Go ahead and unmute yourself.
Well, I guess that's really great.
Okay, go.
So it's often not known to most people that, but you might have known this, that elections in Detroit are remarkably corrupt. And have been. I worked downtown in Detroit in the late 70s, and they were corrupt then. The corruption has become only worse since the city of Detroit has been preyed upon by developers who want to throw out all the poor people, i.e. African Americans. Detroit is 82% African American voters. And they are succeeding very well, thanks to the 2008 disaster with mortgage foreclosures and everything that happened after that. So the clerk of Detroit, her name is Winfrey, Janice Winfrey, she came into her job about 15 years ago after the incumbent clerk died. And that one was incredibly corrupt. I mean, she voted dead people. It was amazing. So this new clerk was going to be the great hope. She was an elementary school math teacher. She knew how to count. But she proceeded to kowtow to all of the wealthy development interests. And that quickly showed. And in 2009, she ran a seriously corrupt election where the seals on the bottom of the absentee ballot cases were broken and compromised so that when a candidate running against the favorite asked for a recount, all of the precincts were a mess. I mean, it was impossible to conduct a serious recount. And we've actually turned those boxes over and discovered those broken seals. So this has been going on for Janice Winfrey's entire tenure, that she's allowed this stuff. It's probably involving some corruption of the voting machines. They had ESNS until 2018, and now they have Dominion scanners. And it's funny how Dominion people are always floating around every Detroit election. It's they're just around. I don't know why they're there. So Janice Winfrey this year is being just as uncooperative as usual. And she is doing everything she can to make it more difficult for Detroit people to vote. Now, this is a city with 30% of residents who do not have a car. Mass transit is pretty lousy. The buses are trying, but it's not very available. So we know that it's very important for this group of voters to have access to absentee voting. And we've been trying like crazy to make every obstacle go away, including adding drop boxes. Well, you need a lot of drop boxes for 480,000 voters. And there wasn't a single one when we started this project in April. Now we're up to 30 in the city of Detroit and in the larger county of Wayne, which has also a lot of minority communities, including Dearborn that has Arab Americans. So that's been a big step forward. But Janice Winfrey got two drop boxes and she proceeded to lock them so nobody could use them for anything. It's just remarkable. And I'm gonna ask Brian to give you some of the tasty examples of how this works when the city clerk is intent on keeping people from voting.
Well, I think we just need to focus on her. If you can do it real quickly.
Yeah,
we're doing this for two reasons. Number one, it's generic. And in many, many cities, there are clerks like Janice Winfrey who could turn the entire election. And number two, this is Detroit. And Detroit itself could turn the entire election. So if you give us 1 minute on things that we need to look out for in both in Detroit and elsewhere, that'd be great.
Detroit will turn the entire result in Michigan. It did in 2016 by people staying home. So, Brian. Brian, can you?
All right, he may be muted. So how do we solve this problem in Detroit?
Well, for first time, the Detroit Free Press has actually published an opinion calling for her to fix it or step down. The Secretary of State has said, well, we're partnering with the city to help them get their act together. In the August primary, 70% of the absentee precincts counts were off. The number of people who cast an absentee ballot and the number of ballots that were counted were completely different. And Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, so my best, I've been fighting City Hall. Basically, you get one person in there, they have their own little fiefdom, and of course it's a large fiefdom. It's 485,000 voters, registered voters in Detroit. 85% of those, according to the census, are African American. So it's a massive disenfranchise of African American voters. And as Jan said, there was actually a study that was very recent, and it's related to COVID, for people having access to COVID testing. They said that 30% of the residents of Detroit don't have access to private transportation. So we went really out of our way to actually advocate for drop boxes across the entire city, 32 drop boxes that we put at fire stations, rec centers, walking distance for people to do that. And it's great, they're going in. It's really wonderful. So we went to the drop box for a site inspection, and I actually was there with an absentee ballot trying to get with a clipboard, doing this sort of picture of saying, hey, let's get someone to on the street to actually fill out their ballot and put it in to do a little photo up for a project. And I found that these drop boxes were locked during business hours. And when I asked about that, they said that there's too many people in Detroit, we're too big, we can't unlock our drop boxes. Didn't make any sense. Obviously, you want the more people, you want more access to these drop boxes. And they're just for ballots. And drop boxes actually provide information. You usually put ballot applications in there to get your ballot. Also, you put in your voter registration stuff, and you can also put all the stuff for the clerk, your application to work at the polls. These are all locked. People have to go to the actual clerk's office, three people at a time maximum, with a mask. I was outraged by this. They had no real good explanation. So we went to the Free Press, and I actually have an article with I'm quoted about doing that. So I think the best response is, if anyone's looking for actionable things, to call your city clerk, ask them what they're doing, and actually, if they're not giving you satisfaction, make this a media response. Make them accountable. Don't let them be able to, you know, not provide as much convenience and access to their voters, and ask them why. Simply say, ask them why. So if anyone has any media contacts, and this is happening in your own backyard, I just got off the phone with the clerk of the city of Dearborn, who isn't putting in drop boxes, but I was relatively satisfied with him putting in outside satellite locations for people to do Dropbox. They really need to act, you know, provide more access. That's the real big thing about that. City of Detroit is actually providing offsite satellite locations too. But the fact that these drop boxes aren't open, it's how many, and they're basically, they're closed right after the primary. These two drop boxes were open just for the primary election on August 4th, and then they closed them. So we're talking months of people not having access. And while I was there, dozens of people drove up, wanted to use the drop box, that's what they're for, and had to go into the office and wear a mask three at a time. So we posted an article response to that. She basically is just kind of, you know, digging in her heels saying, screw it, I'm the decider. Felt a little bit more like Bush saying, I'm the decider. It wasn't a good reason why he's making that decision. It just was, he was the decider and tough. That's
all right. So you're making progress. Art Levine, you had a hand real quick. You're muted.
Yeah, what I want to clarify is, this is a very significant issue, not just for your city, but nationally as well, because now what I want to understand just briefly, I think it's important dynamics. The question is the election official a Democrat, or does the Democratic Party weigh in your state or your county on this issue or not?
This election official, horrifyingly enough, is a Democrat. It doesn't matter. She's working for Republicans who own the city. Okay.
Of Detroit. And you have a Democratic as Secretary of State and a Democratic governor in Michigan, and that doesn't seem to be helping. She's muted again. Okay. Jan, tell us again. I mean, we're all concerned about Michigan. Are you muted again?
She reports to Mike Duggan, the mayor, who is a Republican in Democrats' clothing from the Republican organization of Wayne County. She reports to the Illich family, which owns Little Caesars Pizza. She reports to Dan Gilbert, who is a big financier, and you may know him as the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. These are all the rich 1% that she kowtows to.
This is okay, so, and there are clerks like her all over the country, and we're going to have to deal with it, okay? So take note, please. in Florida, I want to point out, thank you, Jen, and thank you from Ann Arbor. We appreciate it. Kristen, you're saying your chat has been disabled. I don't know. Mike can take a look. In Florida, I want to point out that for those of us who are focusing on the costs of these stolen elections, the governor of Florida and U.S. senator from Florida were both put in office in an election in 2018 that was extremely dubious. As John Brakey knows full well, the vote count, recounts in Florida were stopped, and the governor was seated, the Republican, and the U.S. senator, the truly horrible Rick Scott, was also seated, and now Rick Scott will have a vote on the next Supreme Court justice, and he absolutely did not win that seat, same as in Georgia, and the governor is disenfranchising in Georgia a million people, at least ex-felons who owe fines, and this is the cost of not dealing with stolen elections. Bob in Ohio, Bob Fitrakis, and then we'll go to Steve Rosenfeld. Bob Fitrakis, what is the latest in Ohio?
Nothing overly exciting, except they're not complying. We've been, again, asking for all the contracts on who's doing the programming. So we may have to sue a few counties on that. Most of them are saying they're too busy. They'll get to us. There is one interesting thing that we should note. There's rumblings in the Republican Party and issues being raised that you have to hand deliver your ballot per Ohio law directly to the director of the Board of Election. And hence, if he's out for lunch, that you can't, the law is written in such a way where you can't drop it at the single drop box, or you can't give it to a lower employee. So very sort of odd rumblings in that area. They're claiming that unless Ed Leonard, for example, in Franklin County is there to receive it directly from the voter, it can't be a mail-in vote.
Oh my God. You know, I have to credit the Ohio legislature with tremendous creativity. And also, we were talking about drop boxes. Is the situation in Ohio still that there's only one drop box per county?
Absolutely. And they're challenging the drop boxes. They're saying the law says, you know, you shall deliver the mail-in ballot to the director of the Board of Elections. And they're saying that's not what happens at a drop box. Historically, right, his agents, his employees could literally would come out and take it from you on election day as the cars piled up at the one drop box. What they're now saying is that's illegal.
So if you have an absentee ballot and you want to take it to the election board, and the head of the Board of Elections is at lunch, they won't take your ballot?
Well, that's what the Republicans are now arguing. I'm waiting to look and see if there'll be a lawsuit on it. But they're also saying that it affects the drop boxes.
That makes drop boxes illegal.
Well, because you're not delivering it to the director of the Board of Elections.
Oh my God.
I don't see how it they win with it, but it causes lots of confusion. And it could tie things up in court cases.
All right. Can anybody top that one? Thank you, Bob. I want to go to Steve Rosenfeld now, and then we'll talk about North Carolina, because Steve has published a very important piece. Hopefully you'll put the link in the chat, Steve, if we can unmute Steve Rosenfeld. We're finding now that the disqualification of mailed-in ballots is skewing against young people and against people of color. But Steve, can you tell us about your latest piece?
Yeah, well, this is interesting. We have heard that ballots are rejected. We have heard that there's a lot of litigation to cure that, which means contact the voter and have them do something so that whatever is not correct, like a signature or something, gets resolved. But so the California Voter Foundation did a study of some of the three large Northern California metro counties, two in Silicon Valley, one being Sacramento. And they actually found some of the reasons why young ballots from voters between 18 and 25, three times as many of them are disqualified or not accepted as older groups. And they also found the main reason why ballots from people over 60 are not accepted. And these are human reasons, which are really interesting. This goes beyond just saying they were not accepted. So why? Well, with young people, they tend to, their signatures change between the time they are registered and the time they often fill out these ballots. And they do not necessarily update those or are aware. The envelopes themselves never say that your signature has to match a record. So they just scrawl anything on it. They also act too late. They decide to vote at the last minute and they use the post office and they don't realize that the length of time. And for older people over 60, they found that they leave blank forms, a place where they're supposed to sign their name, blank. They just miss them. They skip it. So I thought that was pretty interesting, because that actually, those are human factors. The other human factor on the election administration side is County of Sacramento decided not to take a second look at why these envelopes were being rejected, and their rejection rate was something like four or five times out of the other counties. As soon as they took a second look and they gave voters an opportunity to cure and fix it, of which 50% of the people who were contacted came in and did something, which is like sign a form or file a new registration. It was fixed. So these are human factors, and I think really worth pointing out because they're on the problem side and on the solution side. So that's that, Howard.
So what we need to do is very, very much encourage people to, young people to deal with their signatures, older people to make sure that they fill out the entire ballot, and get the counties to respond, to take a second look. I mean, that's an incredible statistic. You're saying that half the people that were called came in, and that when Sacramento agreed to do the calls, it made a huge difference. Is that right?
Yeah. They basically had a new election administrator who decided to just break from past precedent and not take a second look. And the number of signature rejections was like 30 or 40%. After they took a second look, it went down to under 10%.
Unbelievable. That's huge. Danette, are you unmuted?
Hi, yes, thank you. Okay. I don't love this. This is all terrifying, but what are we doing to rectify this? This is terrifying, and I like the stories, and they're helpful, but we really need to move on action. Like, what are we doing on the ground? I know the DNC probably isn't doing anything. I don't think the Democrats are doing anything.
Well, actually, this is really interesting. This goes back to what people were talking about before. This is obviously a voter education, a public education issue. You know, people are not familiar.
But wait, it wasn't done. I'm sorry. Okay. We need to move now. We don't have time to, I mean, I would love to debate this to death, but we don't have the time.
No, I'm trying to be really specific. I'm trying to be really, that's what you're saying, super specifically. Okay. So Mark Zuckerberg's $300 million. The $50 million of that is going to the organization run by David Becker, and that is for state public education efforts. That's in the solution department that you are raising and pointing to. I put the link on in the chat earlier. The other $250 million is going to the Center for Technology and Civic Design, or whatever it's called, and it's in there. And any local election official who is designated can apply for money, minimum is a $5,000 grant to fix any problem. Whether I'm trying to find out what they're applying for and seeing, like, can it be done? Because you might want drop boxes and you might not be able to get them. Anyway, so when you say what can be done, you know, there's money to maybe do something. And again, you know, there should be, you know, this is an education thing. People are not aware that their signatures have to match. How do you do it? Well, there's money for that. So I'll just stop there.
Yeah, but actually that is good. But in terms of boots on the ground, do we have a plan for that? Because that's
We've been pushing people as hard as possible. Everybody needs to go into your election board. You need to get your friends to go into the election board. In Michigan and North Carolina and Ohio, we're actually getting people as much as possible. This is what this is for. We need to have, we are airing out these problems, and every one of them applies. We'll talk tomorrow. I'll do this training video with Annabelle. We'll these things to the people. Everybody, first of all, it appears you are not allowed to be an election worker, a poll worker, except in the county you live in. That's generally seems to be the law. It varies from state to state, but by and large, that's the case. So everybody that we know who lives in a county needs to go into the election board armed with this information.
Hey, Harvey, can I ask you a personal question? How do you feel so far? Like, do you feel like we have enough in play right now? I mean, Sally's saying
no. We need people in every county, and in places like Detroit, with a clerk like that, we need, you know, 100 people to go to every precinct. And the pressure, and we can't count on the Democrats. That's the point. I mean, Laura has asked Jan, "What are you getting any help from your Michigan Democrat governor or Secretary of State?" I can tell you, Jan, you can contradict me. The answer is no. You know, there doesn't seem to be any help, even though, you know, you have Democrat governors now in some of these key states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, North Carolina. You know, Jill Stein went into Pennsylvania to do a recount in 2016, got zero help from the Democrats. So, you know, it seems to be bipartisan. Art Levine, real quick. You're still muted. Art Levine. Hold on, you're talking, but we can't hear you.
Fine. Okay. It's at, the instructions were that the only the administrator can mute. Here's the 2-1. There are better organized groups on the ground and some of the Democratic Socialists of America, whatever it's called, like Indivisible, that you can network with in the absence of, and I think it's a little naive to think just us people by ourselves going out, doing
it. Not doing that. There are plenty of people we're in contact with.
Okay. So it's not clear to me. You need to mention specific organizations on the ground or where they, like the local Indivisible chapters, possibly local Common Cause, where people in this community and group can network with. That's one. Two, for Stephen, when you said take a second look, does that mean that they had a curing process that they sent out to the voter and the voter was given an opportunity to review? Or do you just mean the administrator on their own took a second look? I didn't know what you meant, second look.
It actually was both. What happens is administratively, once an initial rejection was made in Sacramento, because they had a new election, chief election officer in the county, that was it, they were done. State passed some laws that were initiating the curing process, which required that, you know, voters be contacted and be told to do something. And then as a result of that, the numbers went down. So it's a little bit of both.
Okay, got it, Art? Kristen says that people, Virginians, can be inside poll observers on behalf of a political party anywhere in the Commonwealth. That's good to know. So we need to continue accumulating this. Jennifer Cohn. Thank you, Steve. Is there anything else you want to add, Steve Rosenfeld?
Well, no, the only other thing is I did have another article that I put out that's really important in the same way that all these discussions have been. And in most swing states, you are not allowed to drop off an absentee ballot on election day at an election day polling place. And this really needs to be a key part of the public information. I won't go. And the reason there have been no lawsuits on this by the Democrats is that, first of all, the lawyers say they have a remedy. They can cast a provisional ballot. So this is why we haven't seen any Democratic Party litigation on this. This is a big deal. And when I talk to people like Phil Kiesling, the former Secretary of State of Oregon, he says this will be a giant traffic jam generator because people will show up. They'll be expecting to vote fast. They'll be told they have to go, like Bob just said before, to a county office. They may or may not be able to do it. It's a lot of variables in state by state, but in general, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, yeah, these are same day registration states, but they'll make you register again. They won't take the ballot. Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, there's all these things that will involve more administrative paperwork, slowing down the process. So that's something else I've just been trying to flag because it has not been covered in any of the record number of lawsuits. So I'll just leave that there.
We are out of time. There are more people on this call at the end.
Sorry, thank
beginning.
You.
Fantastic. Everybody's, I'm sorry we didn't get to more of a round table. We had a lot of back and forth. And this stuff is absolutely critical, as you all know. We will meet again next Monday. And in the meantime, we will have a dedicated Zoom discussion of all these electronic machines and the digital ballot scanners, the security, the use of them. It will be between 60 and 90 minutes, and we'll get together. Anybody email me who wants to be in the discussion of setting up this additional Zoom. Absolutely essential, especially with the push to get an early result. We need to know what's happening with these machines. Again, we are trying to put as many people as possible on the ground. And I will do with Annabelle, we'll produce a video, a training video. Anybody else wants to be on that? With that, by the way, email me. It shouldn't be just me talking to Annabelle. So if you want to join me, we're going to do that tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Solartopia@gmail.com is my email. Send all documents to grassrootsep.org. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Steve Caruso. And Joel, the co-convener, Bob. Oh, by the way, we are not raising money on these calls, but if you do have a donor, if you want to give money, contact Bob Petrakis directly or me. We do have a 501c3. Okay, I mean, this is absolutely terrifying stuff. We got to keep this up. Thank you, Kristen, for your report with Steve from Virginia. And we'll see you next week at the latest. Keep in touch with me, please. No nukes and no more storm elections. God help us.
Built in haste with too many risks and no place.